Find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We've got a tremendous show lined up for you today. We're going to be talking a little Saints with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. We'll be catching up with Randy Cross from CBS Sports. And, of course, we'll talk to our guy, Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com. Plus, we're efforting another guest for you. Woo, it's going to be back end, as they like to say. Got plenty of guests for you at the tail end of the show. But we got a lot talked about to start things off with. And we're going to start things off, ladies and gentlemen, with the Raging Cajuns coming off the big victory this past weekend, going into Athens, Ohio, and getting the win against one of the better teams of the MAC, in the MAC conference, rather, as they went on the road and defeated the Ohio Bobcats. Billy Napier held his weekly presser yesterday. And look, they're not going to celebrate this win for very long because they can't, because they open up Sunbelt play on Saturday at 5 p.m. at Georgia Southern. Once again, Georgia Southern is a team that is coming off 10 wins and a bowl victory. So, yes, they're 3-1, and that's a great thing to do, a great thing to be at this point. Best start since 2012 for the Raging Cajuns. You remember that year, they started off 3-1, but those wins have since been vacated due to the NCAA investigation and violations by the Cajuns. This is what Coach Billy Napier, in his second year, coming off a season where they won the Sun Belt Western Division title, played for a bowl game. They look like they've made a step up, that this is a program on the rise, now 3-1. This is what the head coach had to say about his team's win over Ohio this past Saturday.
You know, certainly pleased with the result Saturday relative to going on the road and really competing hard in the game. I was very impressed with the energy, the effort. Thought we had, you know, kind of created our own enthusiasm. Maybe not quite the level of execution at times that you want. Certainly can play with a little bit more detail, a little bit more precision and discipline. But you know what? We competed throughout the game. We played through adversity. That was a good team.
And they did play through some adversity. They led and they were up late. This was a game that was well in hand. I mean, this is a game that you were just waiting for the final score to tick down before, you know, completing your story if you were a beat reporter. But then Ohio made a run, did so in the fourth quarter, and they took advantage of some UL miscues. Raging Cajuns were called for defensive pass interference a few times on those last couple drives that helped set up those touchdowns. They had a lost fumble. So they had a lost fumble. They had some defensive pass interference calls go against them. And Ohio stormed back. And that's the toughest thing to do in football, is to hold on to a lead when you're on the road. Because as soon as the home team, and particularly the home team's offense, scores to get back into the game, it reinvigorates the entire crowd there and reinvigorates that team. And now you're in a hostile environment trying to get a W and trying to hold on to the W. And 9 times out of 10, most teams will tighten up when that happens. They'll tighten up, and then that allows them to make even more mistakes and allows the other team to get into the game more. You see it over and over again at the high school level, the collegiate level, and even at the NFL. But the Cajuns took those uppercuts, so to speak, from the Bobcats late in that game and then answered themselves and then pulled away and racked up a couple more touchdowns to win in comfortable fashion once again. They gave up some points late. They gave up some yardage late. But the defense did step up, especially in the first half, on the road against the Ohio Bobcats. And this is what Billy Napier had to say about his Raging Cajuns' defensive performance.
Defense in particular, I thought, was very impressive the first three quarters of the game Saturday. Kind of kept us in the game. along with the kicking game. I thought we had the game under control until we figured it out on the offense. But I think you're spot on. I think this league presents a number of different offensive concepts to you. This week is certainly different than most. So new mission, new location, new personnel, new schematics. You know, we got to kind of race the board, start over, turned our attention to Georgia Southern yesterday. And, you know, we'll work hard on it and come up with the best plan we can.
So you liked what the defense has done, and it has made strides, especially since last year to this year. I can tell you it's nowhere near where Ron Roberts, the second-year defensive coordinator for the Raging Cajuns, wants it to be. It's just nowhere near that. But it is improving, and they did come up with big plays, including winning the turnover margin on Saturday. The big breakout star of Saturday's game, of course, was a local product, the running back and former Erath High star. And if you ever got to see this guy play in high school, you knew he was legit. Like, you watched him play and you're like, he's going to play in college. He was that good. You could tell as a sophomore and as a junior and a senior. Of course, I'm talking about Elijah Mitchell, who had nearly 150 rushing yards, three rushing touchdowns. All three of them were 2 yards. Power back, displaying that power, came up big for the Raging Cajuns as they ran the ball so effectively. Him and Trey Regis both eclipsed 100 yards rushing in Saturday's win at Ohio. This is what Billy Napier had to say about the former Erath star.
He has had great offseason. You know, it's good to see him have the production that he had, you know. First significant offseason that he's had. He's banged up a little bit throughout his career early. So you can see the finishing speed, the physicality, the strength. You know, we probably, all these guys, they get attention as a group. You know, it'd be interesting to see if we just had one of these guys, what they could do. But
I find that comment to be interesting. If we only had one of these guys, he'd wonder what they would be able to do. Because they have three legit running backs. I mean, these are guys, all three of them have earned preseason all-conference honors from different publications. Any one of these guys could be the guy. I mean, the way they run the ball and the way their offensive line does such a tremendous job at run blocking in particular. If you didn't split the carries between Elijah Mitchell and Raymond Calais from Cecilia High School and Trey Regis, could one of these guys be a 2,000-yard rusher? Probably. Guarantee you, any three of those guys is a starter at every other Sun Belt team. They're that good. And that's not blowing smoke, okay? And that's just not hyperbole. It's legit. They are legit guys. Raymond Calais has transformed himself into a special teamers, into a kick return specialist, into a legit full running back. Regis and Mitchell, they're legit. So Elijah Mitchell, who did deal with some injuries himself, early on, he had a sensational freshman season that was cut short due to leg injury. He shows you power. And this is the great thing about the Raging Cajuns offense, and particularly their running attack, is that there's been games so far this year that Elijah Mitchell's been the third best back. He hasn't been that much of a factor. Trey Regis and Raymond Calais have just absolutely blown up. And then you saw what happened on Saturday. Elijah Mitchell's the one that has the huge game. How do you game plan for that? Because all three guys are different runners. They all bring something slightly different than the other one does. And how do you game plan for that? It's one thing to game plan for one starting running back in the Sun Belt Conference. Got a game plan. How does he shift? How does he hit the hole? How does he take his breaks? So forth and so forth. Does he have top-notch speed? Oh, the Raging Cajuns have three of those guys. And each one's a little bit different. That's nearly unstoppable to deal with. Just absolutely ridiculous how they're that deep at that position. And once again, kudos to the Raging Cajuns offensive line. They love mauling people. They love run blocking. They love it. You see how happy they get when their running back hits the hole and powers his way in for a touchdown. They get more satisfaction out of that than they do anything else. Coach Napier was also asked yesterday during his weekly press conference there at the Cox Communications Building what type of update was available on his starting linebacker, Chauncey Monick.
His situation is still being evaluated, exactly where he's going to be. We're going to have more of an update Wednesday when we get off the field relative to our entire team and where we're at from an injury standpoint. But we've got a handful of players that will be kind of day-to-day that we'll evaluate throughout the week. We'll give you that exact information on Wednesday.
Of course, Chauncey left Saturday's game against Ohio with what reports have coming out as a lower leg injury. That's why Coach was asked about the extent of the injury. Remember, Monick had that huge game, 4 tackles and 2 sacks in the victory versus Liberty earlier this season. So we'll have to see where he goes from here. Remember, Chauncey actually started his career at Georgia. He is the Jack linebacker for the Raging Cajuns. So we'll find out more on Wednesday about his status moving forward. Billy Napier also talked at his press conference about where this team is at, its mentality. He loves where they're at right now. But he also talked, gave us an update about Andre Jones.
Andre's been, it's one of the reasons why we were able to sustain once Chauncey came out. You know, we've had a number of this second-tier defensive linemen really start to emerge, and Andre is at the top of that list. You know, Andre's a guy who we transitioned to that position there. He's done a really good job for us. You know, he's improved in his technique. I'm impressed with the motor that he plays with. He's more dependable, more accountable, more consistent in his play. And he really was player of the game 2 weeks ago and certainly stepped up, made some big plays in the game Saturday.
And Andre Jones, who's listed as a defensive end, but he can play that linebacker spot as well. He's kind of a hybrid guy. They inserted him in when Chauncey got hurt, and he played well. So once again, depth being a positive for the Raging Cajuns. That's not always been the case in years past. I think we can admit to that. But Andre Jones was able to step up and fill in there at that linebacking pass rushing spot for the Raging Cajuns. And Billy also talked about just how much he's looking forward to getting to open conference play this Saturday when the Raging Cajuns travel to Statesboro, Georgia to take on the Georgia Southern Eagles.
You know, we're excited about turning the page to conference play. And we've got our hands full with another really well-coached football team. A lot of respect to Chad and what he's done there. You know, they work well together as a team. A lot of team speed, a lot of athleticism, and some explosive players on the offense that can make them very difficult to defend. And we certainly know that starts with their quarterback.
Starts with their quarterback. UL head coach Billy Napier talking all things Raging Cajuns yesterday at his presser. We'll talk more, dissect more what Billy had to say at his press conference yesterday, including this week's opponent, Georgia Southern. We'll break it all down right here on RP3 and Company. After this quick timeout, you're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
If it's in the game, then it's in RP3 and Company.
Hey, this is Ben Love. End your workday right. Ride home with Bumper to Bumper Sports. Weekday afternoons from 4 to 7 on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
So far, so good. The roads are clear. No problems to report. No holdups. Call the traffic hotline if you see any problems out there. Call 706-0115.
When you're a member of the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse, there's always something for you to win. get the rewards of being a member, like our most recent clubhouse winner.
Congratulations, you've just won the final Houston Astros weekend getaway.
Woo-hoo-hoo!
Why don't you tell us who hooked you up with it?
Acadiana Sports Fantasy, 103.7 The Game.
It's all up for grabs in the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse. Join now at 103.7thegame.com or on the 103.7 The Game mobile app.
Adventure awaits with the Kawasaki Terex and Terex 4 side-by-sides. Whether you're traversing through mountains, woods, or your own backyard, Terex side-by-sides pack the power to muscle through tough terrain. And it's all backed by the industry-leading Kawasaki Strong 3-year limited warranty. Adventure awaits. Go conquer it with Kawasaki Terex and Terex 4.
First turn, I-10 frontage road in Scott.
Join us for the biggest holiday shopping event of the year at Junior League of Lafayette's Tinsel and Treasures Holiday Market, September 25th through 28th at the Cajun Dome Convention Center. With over 130 merchants from across the country, there is sure to be something for everyone. Stroll through the market to find unique decorations, jewelry, antiques, food, toys, household and kitchen gifts, apparel, skincare items, and much more. In addition to great shopping, Tinsel and Treasures has other special offerings, such as preview party, ladies' night, and the children's event, Breakfast with Santa and Friends. Tinsel and Treasures has been a premier social and economic event in the Lafayette community since 1994, with its proceeds benefiting Junior League of Lafayette's community programs. Get a jump start on all of your holiday shopping at the Tinsel and Treasures Market, September 25th through 28th at the Cajun Dome Convention Center. For more information about ticket sales, call 988-2739 or visit Junior League of Lafayette online at juniorleagueoflafayette.com.
Don't put your life on the line when you dig. Do what the pros do. Respect the marks. Dig with care. And before you dig, call 811. Louisiana One Call.
An interesting creature inhabits the flat, arid plains of many an automobile dashboard. The bobblehead. It's most agreeable and will nod along to anything, despite having no brain function. But when the bobblehead hears how Geico not only saves people money, but also gives them access to licensed agents 24/7 online and over the phone, he'll nod even more vigorously because he knows you should switch. Because yes, switching to Geico is a no-brainer. Easy, bobblehead, easy. You're going to get whiplash.
He gets up early because he lives for this. Here's your host, RP3.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III. The producer extraordinaire is Louis Prejean. If you'd like to give us a call, want to talk to us about the Raging Cajun football team, about the LSU Tigers, go Tigers, or if you want to talk about the Hoodats, we'll be more than happy to listen to you. Put you on the air if you're nice to the man behind the glass, Louis Prejean. The only thing you got to do is call the Arco Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111, 337-706-0111. And we are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Let's talk about them Tigers. Once again, Joe Burrow earned Offensive Player of the Week honors from the SEC for the third time this season. There's only been 4 weeks. I mean, it's only been 4 weeks, right? And he is at a torrid pace, unlike anything we probably have ever seen in LSU history, for sure. Just to recap, this is what Joe has done in his four games so far this season for the LSU Tigers. He's been named Southeastern Conference Offensive Player of the Week 3 times out of the 4 weeks. His odds now, he has the second best odds of anyone to win the Heisman Trophy. His odds have increased that drastically since the beginning of the season. And I've said this before. This happens every single year. Not with LSU, obviously. This happens every single year. That we have our preconceived notions and we have these preseason notions of who's going to be in the mix for the Heisman. We always do. Remember, it was supposed to be, you know, Tua was supposed to win last year. He didn't. You just go through every year, we think someone's going to win, and then someone comes out of left field and wins it. Typically, it's a transfer quarterback at the, you know, Oklahoma, Boomer Sooner. They've won the last two with transfer quarterbacks. And they have another guy in Jalen Hurts from Alabama that looks like he's in the mix to try to win the Heisman as well. Okay, but everyone was talking about Tua or Jake Fromm or Trevor Lawrence out of Clemson, right? It was Trevor Lawrence out of Clemson, it was Jake Fromm out of Georgia, and it was Tua out of Alabama. And then maybe the running back out of Wisconsin. Here we are a month into the season, and there's more buzz for the Heisman Trophy for Jalen Hurts from Oklahoma and Joe Burrow from LSU. This happens. The Heisman Trophy is an odd thing, and there's usually someone comes out of left field to win it. And Joe Burrow could be that guy. Could be LSU's first Heisman winner since the late, great Billy Cannon. By the way, that's LSU's only Heisman Trophy winner. The closest they've come in recent memory would have been the Honey Badger, who actually got invited to New York. Did not win, but at least he was invited for the ceremony. Burrow, in just his four games this season, has joined LSU legend Tommy Hodson in 1989, and Jamarcus Russell in 2006, as the only quarterbacks in LSU history to earn SEC Offensive Player of the Week three times in a single season. In a single season. Where week four is in the books now. The honor is the fifth for Burrow during his LSU career, which, of course, dates back to last season when he won the award twice. His latest honor comes for his record-setting performance in LSU's 66-38 win over Vandy on Saturday, as the senior and Ohio native set a school record with six touchdown passes in the Tigers' victory. 25 of 34 for 398 yards. It was the most points scored in regulation for LSU in an SEC game in school history. And with his 398 passing yards, Burrow became the first player in LSU history to throw for 350 yards or more in three straight games. And he extended his own school record streak of consecutive games with at least 20 completions, now to seven straight. In 17 starts, Joe Burrow has led the Tigers to a 14-3 overall record. So what we're saying is, Joe Burrow's pretty good. The Burrow is pretty good. But once again, he's a competitor. We talked about it on yesterday's show that they can only get better. And Joe Burrow actually graded out his team after Saturday's game. When asked how to grade his team, he actually graded his team out as a B, despite that performance.
I rate myself on how the offense performs. I say we were B today. We were really good in the first half. Two turnovers that we can't have cost us points. So we got some things to fix, but there's still a lot to be happy about.
This is a guy who just threw for 400 yards and six touchdowns and goes, offensively, we were a B today. If I'm an LSU fan, this is exactly what I want to hear. This is a guy that's not going to be feeling himself, so to speak, right? That's not his MO. He just threw for nearly, he threw 2 yards shy of 400 yards and threw a program record six touchdown passes. And he, with a straight face, says, I give myself a B. We had a couple of turnovers, had a couple of missed things right here, there, and there. Not acceptable. We got to clean that up. That's why he's the leader of this team. That's why he won over the locker room as quickly as he did. And it wasn't because the other guys weren't as talented. Miles Brennan's a talented quarterback. They're grooming him to be the heir apparent to Joe Burrow to keep this wide-open offense going for years to come. We've seen what Justin McMillan's been able to do with his leadership and his play at Tulane. who's off to a tremendous 3-1 start themselves in his second season at the helm at Tulane after transferring out from LSU after losing the quarterback battle with Joe Burrow in the fall. It's stuff like that. Yeah, his play on the field has gone a long way. He's having a record-setting season. It's a remarkable performance by any metrics that you could possibly bring to the table. But it's that stuff like that that has endeared him to his coaching staff, and it's that stuff like that that's made him a leader and the guys on that team have responded to. I'd give us a B. You got to love that. What couldn't be graded as a B, though, on Saturday in Nashville was the ridiculous fan turnout for the purple and gold. Now, to be fair, poor Vandy. They don't have a football fan base. They just don't. And they're more than happy to sell their tickets on the secondary market. Even though I think I was told that most of those LSU fans, which I want to say were around 20,000, 20 to 25,000 LSU fans showed up for the game in Nashville. Now, remember, they also had the coaches' caravan event on the Friday before, so made it kind of a big celebration weekend there in Nashville. But I've also been told that not all those tickets were bought on the secondary market. Some of those were just bought from the box office. So, oh, Vandy. But huge turnout there to support the Tigers all the way up in Nashville, and that is not a short commute by any stretch of the imagination. That is actually kind of a bear of a drive to make it from Baton Rouge all the way up to Nashville. This is what the quarterback of the Tigers had to say about the absolute bananas fan turnout there inside Vanderbilt's home stadium in Nashville.
Probably 25. That was a crazy to see. Conference away games, they usually don't give us that many tickets. So I don't know how they got them, but I was happy to see them show up. That was crazy.
I don't know how they got them. Yeah, well, I don't think they had a problem buying tickets. I'm pretty sure if there's any LSU fans listening, they would be more than happy to call us up and be like, nah, we had no problems getting our Vandy tickets. Vandy fans were more than happy to sell those bad boys to us. Because that's just, you know, look, Vandy's a baseball school. Sometimes they're pretty good in basketball. They're not a football school. They're just not. Beautiful city. Amazing city to visit. Tremendous university. One of the best academic institutions in the South. Fan base for the football team? Not so much. Not so much. Okay? Just not. Coach Ed O, though, he noticed the sea of purple and gold in the stands there at the stadium, and he was impressed by the huge fan turnout as well as the LSU faithful made the trip up north to Nashville to support their team.
Seemed like 31,000 for sure. I was so happy when we came through our Tiger Walk on the road. I mean, the guys were waiting for us. It meant a lot to us, and when they start screaming LSU, it seemed like we took over the stadium. I was proud of our fan base. I'm glad they showed up for us today.
I love Joe Burrow goes with 25,000, Lewis. He said, it looked like about 25,000 people in the stand. And Coach O just takes that to another level. Just a little bit higher. Just a little bit higher. I love that. It's probably a little bit lower than that, but still, tremendous support for LSU. Tremendous support for the Tigers. And it was a great atmosphere. Once again, Joe Burrow is legitimately in the Heisman conversation, but he's placed himself in the conversation with his performance against Texas. He can win the Heisman Trophy and remain in the conversation with how he performs against Florida in a couple weeks, against Auburn in a couple more weeks, and of course, in November in Tuscaloosa versus Alabama. Because if LSU can go undefeated in this stretch, and Joe Burrow keeps playing at the level that he's playing in, and the Tigers get to go play for a conference championship more than likely against Georgia, maybe Florida, Joe Burrow can win the Heisman. Will win the Heisman, rather. I think you're going to see a little voting fatigue from those concerning Oklahoma, even though Jalen Hurts is putting up mind-numbing numbers as well. I think there's a little bit of pushback and fatigue for anything associated with the University of Alabama's football program. LSU's a great story. Joe Burrow's a great story. And he's playing at a phenomenal level. But he put himself in the conversation for the Heisman Trophy. He's made himself the second best odds-on favorite to win the award through the first month of the season. But if he wants to bring it home, if he wants to get that official invite to New York City for the Heisman Trophy ceremony, and he wants to hold up the piece of hardware that only one other Tiger has ever held up in LSU's storied football history, he's going to have to beat the big boys and keep doing it. He's going to have to beat Alabama. He's going to have to beat Florida and Auburn. And he's going to have to get revenge against Kellen Mond and Texas A&M. Can he do it? Sure. Absolutely. But only time will tell. Once again, the Tigers are on a bye this week, but they will return to action a week from Saturday as they will host Utah State. Tiger fans, in case you didn't hear yesterday, 11 a.m. kick. I want to say it's the first time in the modern era that a non-conference game inside Tiger Stadium begins in the morning. Scheduled to begin in the morning. The App State game from a few seasons ago due to Hurricane Gustav was moved up from 4 to 10 a.m., from 4 p.m. to 10 a.m. due to a hurricane. That adjustment was made. It was not scheduled at 10 a.m. This game is scheduled for 11 a.m. October the 5th. You can listen to that game live right here, of course, on 103.7 The Game. Pre-game show will start at 9, kickoff at 11 o'clock as Utah State comes to Death Valley. We got to take a quick timeout. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III. Louis Prejean is the producer extraordinaire. And this is RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Coming up at 7:32, recruiting expert, analyst, reporter, Jarrett Rozier will be joining us as he does every Tuesday, giving us the latest updates on all things Cruden here in the state of Louisiana. And then we got a jam-packed hour number three, guys, jam-packed. We got three guests for hour number three. 8 o'clock hour, Andrew Juge talking Saints. Marlon Fave, right, that's right, Big Fave, the LSU legend, will join us. It's been a minute. We'll catch up with Marlon. I'll get his takes on that LSU defense and why are they tackling so poorly. We'll also catch up with Randy Cross of CBS Sports. So jam-packed hour number three. If you want to get your calls in, by all means, do so now. And next hour, call the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. We had a poll question yesterday, and we asked you, our devoted listeners, did you believe that Teddy Bridgewater, with his performance on Sunday, had silenced his doubters, had proved his doubters wrong with his performance on Sunday? Once again, an efficient performance. Not spectacular, not sensational. It was just efficient. Nearly 200 yards passing, two touchdowns. I don't even think he threw a deep ball. Short, intermediate, passing game. But efficient. No turnovers. Alvin Kamara had a great game as well. 72.7% of you out there said yes, he did prove his doubters wrong. 27.3% of you said no, he did not. I want to hear from you guys. Why do people hate Teddy Bridgewater? I think it's a legitimate question because it's been a long time since I've had a lot of pushback from people. I get asked this all the time. Well, Teddy Bridgewater ain't the quarterback. He can't be our backup quarterback. Why? What have you seen that suggests that he can't be your quarterback? If you have the expectation that whoever's going to be replacing Drew Brees is going to be just like Drew Brees, then you're living in a fantasy world. Because they're not. See Miami Dolphins for every quarterback that's played since Dan Marino retired. Okay? What has happened once in the history of the National Football League that one legendary quarterback's replaced by another legendary quarterback? That would be the San Francisco 49ers when Joe Montana was pushed out and they brought in Steve Young, and Steve Young led them to another Super Bowl and won a regular season MVP. Maybe Green Bay with Favre and Aaron Rodgers. You don't replace a legend with a legend. It rarely happens. Hey, stop hating on Teddy. But if you want to hate on Teddy, I want to hear from you. We're going to take a timeout. Hour number one's in the books. Hour number two's coming up. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back. Good morning to you. This is RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parse III. I'm joined by my producer extraordinaire, Louis Prejean. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Led off today's show talking Raging Cajun football. We also talked LSU football. LSU's on the bye this week. They'll return to action once again on October the 5th at home in Death Valley against Utah State. That'll be at an 11 a.m. kickoff. Woof. By all reports, from what I can gather, it's the first non-conference kickoff, non-conference game kickoff in Tiger Stadium in the morning, scheduled possibly ever, or at least all the way back to 1960. The only other game that took place, started kicking off in the morning time at Tiger Stadium, that was a non-conference opponent, was against App State, and that was due to Hurricane Gustav pushing up the start time from 4 to 10 a.m. at the last minute. We'll have that game, though, for you right here, Tiger fans in Acadiana. Pre-game show will start at 9 o'clock on October the 5th. The show, the kickoff, you know it's going to be a show because Joe Burrow is going to be throwing the ball around the field. We'll be at 11 a.m. Raging Cajuns are in action this weekend on the road, Statesboro, Georgia, taking on the Georgia Southern Eagles. Shane Wirtz should be back at quarterback after suffering an injury in the opener versus LSU. He'll be back. Huge game for the Raging Cajuns because they have Georgia Southern this Saturday. Then their next game will be at home versus App State on a Wednesday night, and then they have to go travel on the road. Their next game at Ark State. Those are your three most difficult games in conference play. I know Troy still lingers at the back end of the schedule, but the schedule gets easier with games against South Alabama and ULM, two of those last three to close out the season. The Saints, they're not on a bye. They can't celebrate that victory over Seattle because they got to turn around and play at home this Sunday night on Sunday Night Football versus the Dallas Cowboys. That's right. Hudats will be back inside the friendly confines of the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Do they need to win this game, though? Do they need to win this game? It's a legitimate question. Cowboys are 3-0. Dak Prescott's playing at a high level. By the way, that's another guy that gets knocked way too much. Dak Prescott's a good quarterback. Hate to tell you. And I'm just not saying that because he's from Louisiana. Guy's a good quarterback. You may hate him because he plays for the Dallas Cowboys. Guy's a good quarterback. Is he the best quarterback in the league? No. Is he a good quarterback? Yep. There you go. But do the Saints need to win this game? I say no.
I say no. I don't think they need to win this game. They'd like to win this game. Sunday night football at home. You know the place is going to be electric, right? It's going to be sold out. The dome will be rocking. It would be great if they took down the Cowboys. Once again, a rivalry because everyone hates Dallas. Hell, there's Dallas fans that hate the Cowboys. Been a long time since the Super Bowl. But everyone hates the Cowboys. But Dak Prescott, Amari Cooper, Zeke Elliott are going to come to town, that really good defense that the Cowboys have. Can the Saints win this game? Sure. Once again, this is the NFL. Anything can happen. Hell, the Buffalo Bills could beat the New England Patriots this week. Not likely, but could. Fluke plays happen, injuries happen, and sometimes really good teams lose to teams they shouldn't. Could the Saints beat the Cowboys? Yes. Will they? Yeah, I don't know. I think winning on the road in Seattle is a great accomplishment. It gets them to 2-1. Dallas, look, if the Saints come out and they beat the Dallas Cowboys without Drew Brees on Sunday Night Football, the rest of the NFC should be very scared. Because Drew Brees will come back. But if the Saints, Sean Payton can game plan a way to get a W over the team that he used to be an assistant coach for all those years ago. You know, the team that he keeps being linked to by bogus media reports, which I just love. Because anytime Jason Garrett's on the hot seat, which he's never on the hot seat really because Jerry Jones loves him. And even when he's bad and mediocre, Jerry still loves him and lets him keep his job. Now that's some job security right there. Third string quarterback turned head coach. Jason Garrett's a direct connection to the glory years of the three Super Bowl championships in the early 90s. That's why Jerry loves him so much. Plus, Jason Garrett does whatever Jerry wants. That's another reason why he loves him like a son. But every time there's rumors that Garrett may be on his way out, the first name that pops up as being the new Dallas Cowboys head coach is Sean Payton. Despite the fact that he's always locked up under contract, despite the fact that he just got a 5-year contract extension, what, 2 weeks ago? Less than 2 weeks ago? If Sean Payton can find a way to beat a pretty good-looking Dallas Cowboys team, an undefeated Dallas Cowboys team, Saints are going to be dangerous. Now, they'll need Alvin Kamara to step up in a big way, just like he did against Seattle. 150 all-purpose yards sounds about right, because Dallas's defense is salty. Make no doubt about it. Alvin Kamara will need to have a big game. Michael Thomas will have to do his things. But Teddy Bridgewater will have to step up his game to another level if they want to beat Dallas. So probably needs to throw for more than 200 yards and probably needs 3 touchdowns. That's what I would have to say. And he can't have any turnovers, not against that opportunistic defense of Dallas's. Cowboys are a legit team in the NFC. Now, are they a Super Bowl team? No. But they're a playoff team. They're the type of team that's going to win 13 games in losing the divisional round. Because that's what they do, because they're the Cowboys. That said, they're playing at a very good level right now. If the Saints want to beat the Cowboys on primetime television this Sunday night, Teddy Bridgewater is going to have to play at a higher level. Alvin Kamara is going to have to be a beast once again. In the defense, I hate to say it, but a lot's going to fall on their shoulders. Because they have to pick their poison. And they have to play at an elite level. Once again, they played well in good stretches against Seattle. They also let Russell Wilson have 450 yards of offense.
and four touchdowns. Yes, one of them was a garbage time touchdown at the end. I get that. But they let Russell Wilson put up 450 yards. Dak Prescott can put up 400 yards. So they have to figure out, Dennis Allen's going to have to come up with a game plan to neutralize Dak Prescott and the passing attack with Amari Cooper as their lead wide receiver and the old man Jason Witten at tight end. Or try to bottle up Zeke at running back. The way this season has gone so far, Dak Prescott's the more impactful player, even though they gave Zeke the contract. Dak's the one that's affecting the game more. Zach's the one that is playing at a higher level. If I'm Dennis Allen and the Saints, I'm trying to stop that. I'm trying to stop that. I'm trying to slow down the passing attack. So that means Marshawn Lattimore is going to have to continue to improve. That means Eli Apple is going to have to continue to make plays. Marcus Williams had a big bounce-back game on Sunday. You look at his actual grades from the game, he had one of his best games he's had in a season. But those guys are going to have to be at another level. Lattimore, Apple, Williams, those three in particular, and Von Bell, those four are half going to be playing mistake-free, aggressive, disciplined defensive football if the Saints want a chance to win. Because the front seven will do their job. I have far more confidence in the Saints slowing down Zeke Elliott than I do them slowing down Dak Prescott. So that's going to be the key of the game. Teddy's going to have to make some big plays, and more importantly, Teddy's probably as efficient as he was against Seattle. And they'll be able to use that underneath game. They'll be able to use those short throws to move the ball against Dallas's defense. Make no doubt about it. They'll be able to do that. But he's going to have to take some shots downfield. He's going to have to take some shots downfield to Ted Ginn Jr. or whoever's left out of the MASH unit that has become the wide receiving core for the Saints and whoever can stretch the field. And for the love of baby Jesus, this is the game that Jared Cook needs to step up. Because if Jared Cook can be anything besides a statue out there, that would go a long way of beating Dallas's defense. Because if you can have Jared Cook step up and play at the level that you're paying him to do so, then that frees up everything else. That's the whole reason why they signed Jared Cook to begin with, to free up Michael Thomas, not to let them be able to double team Michael Thomas, actually let Thomas have some one-on-one matchups instead of always having a safety being come over to blanket him to help the cornerback. Got to get Ted Ginn Jr. involved downfield. Let Michael Thomas have those one-on-one matchups. Jared Cook can do that. Jared Cook can take the pressure off of Michael Thomas. He can free up that the coverage for Ted Ginn Jr. as well and help Alvin Kamara. But they have to get him involved in the game plan. They have to make sure Teddy Bridgewater gets him involved and him and Teddy develop a rapport. They have to do that this week. If they can do that, they can win this game. If Jared Cook gets involved and plays at the level that they're paying him, which the Saints are paying him as a Pro Bowl caliber tight end, not as Kobe Fleener. If he's less Kobe Fleener and more, I don't know, Jason Witten, who's old as hell. If he can just go out there and get him five catches for like 65 yards, that's all he needs to do. Literally, five catches for 65 yards probably adds another 10 points on the board for the Saints if that's what the kind of production they can get out of Jared Cook. So you want my keys for the game? Teddy Bridgewater's going to have to take shots downfield. The short intermediate passing will be effective. They will be able to move the ball, but you got to take some chances downfield against the Cowboys secondary. Stretch the field with Ted Ginn Jr. on the outside. That's one. Two, defense is going to have to step up in a big way. Not necessarily the front seven. They'll take care of their job, and if you've been paying attention and watching the film, you'll notice that. They're getting a good pass rush. They're doing a good job there. But it's going to be the secondary. They're going to have to play disciplined and smart against Dak Prescott, because Dak Prescott ain't no dummy. So, stretch the field, Teddy Bridgewater's going to have to take shots down the field. You got to stretch the field to 10 and get Junior. That's number one. Number two, the defensive secondary has to step up its game, play disciplined football. Don't necessarily need to force turnovers, which would be great, but just don't give up big chunk plays. And number three, Jared Cook. Just need five catches for 65 yards. Five catches for 65 yards, and that will give the Saints an extra 10 points. Because then the defense, and particularly that vaunted Dallas linebacking core, has to worry about the big fella coming across the middle, catching first downs. Once again, that takes the pressure off the running game. That takes the pressure off of Michael Thomas. That takes the pressure off of Ted Ginn Jr. This is why you signed the guy. Time for him to earn his paycheck. And he can start doing that Sunday night inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. We got to take a quick timeout. It's RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game. Welcome back. We're talking all things Hoodats there in the last segment. That inspired us to craft a new poll question. Actually, I give all my credit to Louis Prejean, producer extraordinaire, because he was like, Ray, you made some tremendous points there, things I hadn't thought about. You're so brilliant as the host of this show. Let's put this up as a poll. I couldn't even finish that sentence. He said none of those things. He just gave me the glare like, really, dude? No. We got a new poll question up for you, and we do want to hear from you. You want to share your thoughts? Don't hesitate. Call the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. New poll question. It's going to be up here momentarily. It is this. What is the most important factor for the Saints defeating the Cowboys? Once again, Saints, Cowboys, Sunday Night Football. You can listen to that game live right here on 103.7 The Game, courtesy of Westwood One, by the way. Here's your choices of what is the most important factor for the Saints defeating the Cowboys. Number one, Teddy Bridgewater stretching the field by taking shots downfield. Essentially throwing the deep ball from time to time. Number two, the Saints secondary playing discipline assignment football, a.k.a. don't give up big plays. Don't let Russell Wilson throw for 400 yards. Or number three, tight end Jared Cook having a breakout game, five catches for, say, 65 yards. Those are your choices. You can go to 1037thegame.com. Go vote on the poll right now. It's up. I'm getting the thumbs up from my producer extraordinaire, Louis Prejean, that the poll question is up and ready to go. So go vote on that right now. You can also give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline and give us your thoughts that way as well. 337-706-0111. Do you think the Saints have a shot against the Cowboys? Dallas is undefeated. It is early in the season, but they do have Zeke Elliott, one of the best running backs in the league. They got one of the best young quarterbacks in the league in Dak Prescott, and a very good wide receiver in Amari Cooper, and a defense that is salty. And traditionally, Dallas has always been a thorn in the Saints' side. Always has been. Always has been. So, do you think the Saints can defeat the Dallas Cowboys? Louis Prejean, it's time for you to grab the microphone, sir.
Don't do this to me, Ray.
I need your thoughts. I need your thoughts. You're a smart young man. You follow the National Football League.
Yes.
What do you think? Sunday night football inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, coming off the big win on the road in the rain without Drew Brees, proving that they can win without number nine. You know number nine is going to be in the house. You know Brees is going to be in the house supporting the team. Do the Saints have a legit chance of defeating the undefeated Dallas Cowboys this Sunday?
Absolutely. Every team has a legit chance to beat any team on Sunday. Now, that's cliche, but with the Saints in this particular game, and the reason I said don't do this to me, Ray, is because I thought you were going to ask for another score prediction. We'll give those on Friday. You just got to give me time.
But yes, I'll give you all week to prepare your score prediction.
But, yeah, the Saints do have a legit chance of beating the Cowboys, and it showed on the road against Seattle. You're going to be back home. That's going to be nice. Also, with the short intermediate routes for Teddy Bridgewater, you can't rely on those too much because the Cowboys, now they have a full week of tape on Teddy.
That's correct.
Prepare. So they know the kind of offense that they're going to run with Teddy Bridgewater. Now it's up to Sean Payton to switch some things up, like to get Ted Ginn involved a little bit more. Are they going on an end-around? Can you run end-arounds with Ted Ginn Jr. against the Cowboys defense? I don't think so. But if the Cowboys start to sell out on those short routes from the Saints, it's up to Teddy Bridgewater to take those deep shots.
Correct.
And be willing to take those deep shots. You don't have to complete 80% of them or 70% of them. 50, 40, maybe make two splash plays, and then you're okay. You need to be a threat in the deep passing game if you're Teddy Bridgewater. At least attempt those throws if the Cowboys start to sell out on those short routes.
Yeah, because if you don't, they'll just sit on you, right? They'll just sit on the short underneath stuff. If you don't, if there's no threat for the deep ball. So, and Teddy has a good enough arm to throw the deep ball, okay? So you're going to have to let him take some shots. Now, once again, the elements probably played a role. Good points there by Lewis. The elements probably played a role in their game plan. Also, probably trying to ease Teddy into what they need to do, right? Not, you know, don't put too much on his plate. Don't put too much on his shoulders. We're on the road. Elements. It's raining. It's outside. Home of the 12th man. Let's try to make it as easy for Teddy as possible. But they're going to have to be a little bit more aggressive, especially with the downfield passing attack, if they want to beat the Cowboys come Sunday night. We'll talk more about Saints with Andrew Druge when he joins us at 8:02. But coming up next, Jarrett Rozier. We'll talk a little recruiting with the man from TigerDetails.com himself. Right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. Right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. I am your host, Raymond Parch III. Louis Prejean is the producer extraordinaire. And we are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios. Presented by Lafayette Roofing. Just a reminder, make sure to go vote on our latest poll question at 1037thegame.com for the Saints to defeat the Cowboys on Sunday night. What needs to be the biggest factor? Is it Teddy Bridgewater taking more shots down the field, opening up that vertical passing game a little bit more? Is it the Saints secondary playing disciplined assignment football, not giving up the big plays? Or is it Jared Cook finally having an impact in a game, having a breakout game, like five catches for 65 yards? So you can go vote right now at 1037thegame.com. Our next guest, he doesn't have to worry about stepping up and winning because he does that already. One of the best recruiting analysts and reporters in the state of Louisiana, knows all the ins and outs when it comes to recruiting for LSU and for the Raging Cajuns. He joins us every Tuesday. It's our good friend, the one and only, Jarrett Rozier. Jarrett, good morning to you, brother. How are you?
Good morning, man. Doing well. Just kicking off a casual little Tuesday, trying to avoid camels and Floridians.
I should always avoid the camels and the Floridians because apparently
it's a pretty typical Tuesday.
pretty typical Tuesday. The army of jorts is coming in a few weeks. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, a game like Vandy really doesn't help recruiting all that much because you've already seen the offensive explosion from LSU. They saw it in Texas. That probably went a lot farther on the recruiting trail, especially with quarterbacks and wide receivers, than, say, a game against Vanderbilt. It just reinforces that. But let's get to it. Let's talk a little bit about John Everett, defensive lineman Patrick Jenkins. He announced his decommitment from LSU on Friday night. Jarrett, were you surprised by this, and what does this mean, and does it actually hurt?
I actually kind of was. You know, Eric played Thursday night, had a tough game against Carver on Thursday night down in New Orleans, and then I was heading over to U-High and Catholic in Baton Rouge on Friday and saw Pat's announcement via Twitter, and there's not a ton usually that surprises me a lot with LSU recruiting, because usually I can kind of, me or Jimmy will kind of hear some things and are able to know something is at least potentially in the works. I had not heard anything about Pat decommitting. And so I was surprised because he was a guy that I know that, as much as we talk about how packed this LSU class is and that there's going to be some changes, whether that be LSU, you know, going a different direction with some guys or some guys going a different direction because they have a lot of elite
players committed to this class and a lot of other top programs continuing to chase them. Pat wasn't a guy that I really saw being someone moving on from this class because he had been pretty emphatic about his commitment to the Tigers a couple months back, and LSU, I mean, he seemed to fit a good role for them as they continue to bolster that defensive front with a lot of guys in the class. So, you know, it's kind of a tough situation to get a read on. I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up back in the class right now, still trying to, you know, get some more info from Pat about what exactly happened there, who was potentially in his ear, stuff like that. And so it's kind of tough to see for LSU right now, but also I don't think it's a done deal. And if you are going to lose somebody, they have a few defensive linemen already committed, so it's a position in that class that they feel pretty good about right now. It's, you know, it's a little different than if you lose one of the quarterbacks or, you know, potentially a wide receiver or Elias Ricks or the only true offensive line commit. You know, there's some other positions that it might sting a little bit more in terms of what you already have committed to this class. And then on the flip side of things, there, you know, the Tigers have been in pretty steady conversation with some other defensive linemen. They've as good of a job as they've done of putting this current class together. We talked a little bit last week about they continue to be in conversation with so many prospects that are undecided right now that it's not like they would have to build anything from scratch, you know, particularly in that defensive front to because they've still been in contact with a lot of guys. And you know, another in-state guy, Jacobin Guillory, who we mentioned a little bit last week after just seeming like he had a great visit for that Northwestern State game. He's a guy that you started to hear more about potentially staying home in-state and playing his college ball at Baton Rouge than you had in a little while. That's another one, just one of those traditional ones that looks like it'll probably come down to LSU-Bama down the stretch, but he's kind of a big name to keep an eye on, particularly for some Louisiana fans. But as we mentioned last week, they're still recruiting guys in-state and out-of-state in that defensive front, and there's a chance Pat ends up back in the fold, but if not, they have a good group already on board and, you know, a good group that they remain in contact with in case they do need to go another direction.
We're talking with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jarrett, let me ask you this, and I know it's early, but offensively during, you know, for recruiting, they're looking at this offense and going, wow, look at this. The wide receivers, running backs, offensive linemen, quarterbacks, all the skill position guys have to look at this high-powered offense for LSU and go, I can't wait to be part of that. Is there any chance that kind of high-powered offense, which, as we've seen, has kind of gassed the LSU defense, could that possibly have a negative role in recruiting on the defensive side of the ball?
I don't think it's really going to hurt that much on that side just because of, I mean, a lot of the top programs really are going that direction. You've seen Alabama, this is LSU's first year with this look, but Alabama's trended this direction. They maybe haven't had quite the same defensive issues or concerns or criticisms earlier this season as LSU, you know, not to the same level, but it's just a different look of football overall. And you've seen it in the Big 12 for years, and teams like Oklahoma and Texas still be able to recruit pretty top level defensive players. I mean, really good athletes on that side of the ball. And I think ultimately you can still be a really good defensive player and a really good defense and a successful defense with a fast-paced offense. Just kind of the metrics of success end up being a little bit different because you end up on the field, you know, a lot more quickly after just getting the ball back to your offense. You end up on the field more possessions per game, and so naturally some more points are going to be scored at some point. But ultimately, you still have a lot of opportunities to make plays and a lot of opportunities to win as a program and go have a lot of success. And I think if you're an LSU team that looks the way this LSU team has these first 4 weeks of the season, and you're competing for a playoff spot, potentially a national championship, and the defense doesn't look quite what it maybe has looked in some years past, but is still doing its job to help that high-powered offense, compete at that national level, that it's not going to be a tough sell for LSU to keep some of those defensive guys on board and interested in coming to play in Baton Rouge.
We're talking with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com, recruiting analyst/reporter. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. All right, Jarrett, there's a rumor that began circulating. It was yesterday, last night, actually, that Alabama might be pressing the young man out of Washington, D.C., one of the best wide receivers in the country, Rakim Jarrett, to flip from LSU. Anything to that, or is that just good old-fashioned internet lies?
Yeah, right now I'd kind of take it with a little bit of a grain of salt. It's something that popped up just as you mentioned via Twitter and started to gain a lot of traction because he's a big name recruit and there's obviously a couple of the elite programs in the country with some pretty strong fan bases, and so as things do on Twitter, it picked up some steam from a lot of different directions. Rakim is a guy that we've talked about for months is going to be one of the players in this class that LSU really has to continue to work and fend off teams like Alabama or Ohio State or Clemson, because there was going to be no let up from other programs that wanted him to be a part of their 2020 class. So I don't think anything is done with him several of these guys until you get to December and an official signing and things like that. Cause he's been, we were just talking about Patrick Jenkins being a little bit of a surprise. Rakim has been one that you've kind of realized you need to keep an eye on and monitor all the way through. But with that said, it's something that right now I don't know that there's any extra substance to than just that. He's been really impressed with how things have gone with the LSU offense this season, which was going to be one of the biggest determining factors for him ultimately, was seeing if all the talk around LSU's offense really did play out on the field on Saturdays. And so far, it has, to the tune of, through a lot of statistics, the number one offense in the country. And he, in recent weeks, has just seemed so enamored with the way things are going for Joe Burrow and all those receivers and everything with the program, with the addition of Joe Brady in the offseason, just kind of reaffirming his interest in being a part of that for years to come. So I think it's something to certainly monitor over these next – shoot, we're down to only 12 weeks now until that December signing day. It's something to monitor over these next few months. But right now I wouldn't get any more concerned than just kind of the baseline.
Talking with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com, recruiting analyst/reporter. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. All right, Jarrett, maybe you can help clear up a fairly muddy picture involving Zachary Evans. He tweeted out late last week, "I've decided," but then there was little follow-up, little information whatsoever. So what do you make of his recruitment as it stands right now? It's a star running back. And is this the guy, is this the running back that LSU's been looking for this upcoming class?
It's certainly the guy that LSU has been looking for and would love to be the guy that they ultimately get. I still don't know that there's a lot of clarity with Zach. He said he's decided, but then hasn't really referenced any specific timeline, let alone point to a favorite. I think LSU is still in the mix You saw him make that announcement and then go to Texas A&M over the weekend, which was another school that was always going to stay in the mix and seemed like he had a good visit. And so I think a lot of things are trending the Aggies' direction, as much as folks in Louisiana will hate to hear that. Sam Spiegelman caught up with him a little bit over the weekend, and that seemed to be the sense that Sam got was that the Aggies had really gained some momentum. But I think until you see something definitive, LSU is going to continue to pursue and continue to be one of those top teams in the mix with Texas A&M, Georgia, and Alabama. It's really going to be interesting. He's a guy that all these programs, I think, see as really, you know, a chance to be an elite difference maker for their programs. And he sees a lot of benefits in every direction and is kind of torn and just trying to legitimately figure it out for himself and having some trouble because they are some really strong options overall. Texas A&M with a little bit of an advantage being closer to home, and you know, but every school has kind of its pros and cons, and that'll be something. I think one of the we've been talking about Zach Evans for a while. I think one of the biggest things, pieces, prospects, storylines to watch the rest of this LSU class, because they still need a running back, and they've really sought after him, but so have a lot of other programs. So it's a battle on their hands trying to bring him out of Texas and potentially have him land in Louisiana. And depending on how late in the process things go with that running back decision, what their next course of action is with some of these other guys, if he ultimately does end up in College Station, Athens, or Tuscaloosa.
We're wrapping things up here with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. All right, Jarrett, I'll get you out on this, brother. I know you had a chance to up close and personal get to see the U-High Catholic games as well as Carr and Easton this past weekend. I know Easton's got that running back, Ashad Johnson. He's one of the top remaining uncommitted prospects in the state. And I know based on your reporting as well, Carr has a cornerback in Jamie Vance, who announced his decommitment from Arkansas. First of all, can't blame him. Have you seen them play? So where do we stand? Who's in the mix for Johnson here in the state, and who's in the mix for Vance now that he's decommitted from Arkansas?
Yeah, Ashad, I've been so interested in, because as much as LSU continues to pursue Zach Evans and look elsewhere for some potential running backs, Ashad's been the last few years one of the more fun kind of traditional style running backs in Louisiana that I've enjoyed watching in recent years. And he had a kind of shake back from a knee injury in the spring. And so I know that was kind of a cause of hesitation for LSU, but he certainly looked pretty good on Saturday night against Edna Carr. And when I talk about waiting to see what happens with Zach Evans, I'm interested to see how late that process goes and what that means for potentially a guy like Ashad. And as much as he has been interested in potentially playing for LSU, if by the time LSU decides that he might be a guy to add to the class, is he still going to be there? I had a chance to see Kyle Edwards at Destrehan 2 weeks ago and now Ashad, and I can't help but watch a couple of these guys and wonder if in 3 years LSU fans could end up looking at those guys the way they look at Travis Etienne right now and think that it's a running back that was right here in state that got a little bit overlooked and could have made a difference for this program while the program was chasing a Cam Akers or in this instance a Zachary Evans. So I'm interested to see how that shakes out at that position for LSU and ultimately big picture for Ashad. And then, we talk about Pat Jenkins being a little bit of a surprise. I wasn't particularly surprised by Greedy's decision to decommit from Arkansas. I thought that could even happen a little bit earlier. I was checking in with him, I guess in June, asking where he stood, and we were just kind of talking about the direction of the Arkansas program, and it was going to be something that he was watching. And so interested to see what's next for him. I know Mississippi State is one, you know, another SEC program that has been really interested in him and kept in contact with him, and he could end up in Starkville very likely. You know, Louisiana Tech and in-state school, I think, is a place that he has a really good relationship, and that's another one that I think is worth watching early in this kind of renewed recruiting process for Greedy. But he should have plenty of options as other schools start to check in, and I'm sure already have started to check in these past couple of days, because he's a really talented corner that I think can make a difference for a program.
Jarrett, appreciate the insight and your time as always, brother. Keep up the tremendous work at TigerDetails.com, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Thanks, Red.
Jarrett Rozier from TigerDetails.com joins us there on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Great stuff there. Interesting. Tigers lose a commitment there. Guy decommits, but once again, odd thing, especially with only 12 weeks away from the early signing period, but could he come back into the fold? Absolutely. And that uncommitted running back? Woo! You don't want to have a Travis Etienne thing, as Jarrett said. You know, the guy who's a Heisman Trophy candidate for Clemson, won a national championship, going to be a first-round draft pick? Yeah. We're going to take a timeout. More RP3 and Company coming up right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Good morning. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parse III. I'm joined by producer extraordinaire Louis Prejean, and we are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We've talked a little bit about LSU football. They're on the bye week. We've talked a little bit about Raging Cajuns football. They're on the road against Georgia Southern on Saturday. We've also talked about the New Orleans Saints. And I've sat there and told you my thoughts on what needs to happen on Sunday to take down the Dallas Cowboys. But we're going to get our next guest thoughts on that as well as recap the game that was in Seattle, the big road victory for the Hoodats. He is one of the men behind the Saints Happy Hour podcast. He joins us every Tuesday, and he loves getting in Twitter feuds with people about Teddy Bridgewater. It's the one and only Andrew Juge. Andrew, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
So let's start there with Teddy. I laugh every time I see you interact with the trolls on the Twitter, and God bless you for doing it. I don't have the patience nor the time, but you do. So let's start there. Why do people have such a hard time wanting to give praise to Teddy Bridgewater?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's one of those things where we've been spoiled by having the luxury of watching Drew Brees for, you know, almost the past 15 years. And so when you have a quarterback that's really, I mean, we can debate where he sits on the all-time list, but I think it's hard to debate that. I mean, I think universally everyone would agree that for his career he's a top 10 quarterback. I think you can make the argument that he's top five. You could even take it further than that. But the point is, when you have a transcendent quarterback that's really one of the best to ever do it, I think it's much easier to notice flaws in a quarterback. But I think it's important to remember, first of all, that Teddy Bridgewater is the backup. And he's a backup quarterback in the NFL for a reason. So, you know, from there, I'm not personally in a hurry, Raymond, to figure out if he's the quarterback of the future for the Saints. You know, at this point, his role as a backup is to fill in for an injured starter and give you the best chance to win a game. And in Seattle, he did that. He won the game, and you know, he gave up no sacks. He did not turn the ball over a single time, and he completed 70% of his passes. So, you know, would I have liked to have seen him push the ball down the field more? Sure. Would I have liked to have seen him maybe be a little bit quicker with his reads and a little more decisive with his throws down the field? Sure. But, again, he's a backup quarterback. He's a backup quarterback for a reason. And he went on the road at Seattle in a driving rainstorm, did all those things statistically that I talked about that was highly efficient, and the Saints won the game. So it's hard to fault him too much, at least so far, with what he's been able to produce. Now, he will likely have to play better, and he will likely have to do more in other games to continue winning. But he didn't in this game. And ultimately, when the other team is making mistakes, you want to allow them the room. You want to give them the rope to hang themselves with. And I thought the Saints did that. So, you know, ultimately with Bridgewater, it's very much wait and see. And week to week, things can change. But, you know, I think the fans have been spoiled a little bit by Breeze, and they need to understand that Breeze, in his first start under Sean Payton in 2006, threw for under 100 yards or under 200 yards. He had one touchdown, one interception, a fumble, and that was his first start with Sean Payton. It was a win against the Cleveland Browns. And so, you know, we don't know where it goes from here, and I'm not suggesting that Bridgewater will ever be Breeze, but I do think this team can win with him at quarterback.
We're talking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. All right, Andrew, we heard all about this two-quarterback system that was going to be thrown out there. It proved just to be a smokescreen. Taysom Hill was barely on the field. I think he had, one reception. So this is going to be Teddy Bridgewater's team moving forward, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. I think to some degree, the weather and the environment played a role. I think when you consider the crowd noise in Seattle and the wet ball, you know, just the temperatures, the weather, the rain, I don't think the Saints wanted to get into a situation where there were a lot of moving parts and pieces. I think they really wanted to simplify the offense. It was clear that the game plan was to be highly safe and highly efficient. And I thought they did that. So, you know, I think that's a little easier to execute when you got one guy behind center primarily. And that's why I think you saw limited snaps from Taysom Hill. Also, I think the margin for error with injury is much smaller. And I think that's why you saw less of Taysom Hill on special teams too, with Breeze being out. If something happens to Taysom Hill in the game, then you're down to one quarterback. So I think that's another thing the Saints were being careful about. So, yes, I do think this is Teddy Bridgewater's team moving forward. I do think there are games where maybe we'll see Taysom Hill a little bit more than we saw him in Seattle. I think if the Saints are at home and there isn't the weather component, depending on the matchup, if they feel like they need to utilize Taysom Hill's skill set to give him a chance to win, then I think they will. In this particular game, it just didn't come up as necessary.
We're talking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, give me your thoughts on what you saw from Alvin Kamara on Sunday in Seattle.
You know, I thought he had a great year last year, but I don't know that he ever fully tapped into the magic that was his rookie season. You know, obviously he was Rookie of the Year, and he took the league by storm. And I thought this game was maybe a return to some of that magic we saw in his rookie season. And again, that's not to despair anything he did last year. I thought he was very, very good. But this was just vintage peak form Alvin Kamara. I mean, what more can you say about the guy? I thought he put the team on his back, especially offensively. He really carried the load. And Seattle just had a lot of trouble stopping him. I think, to me, the thing that's always so impressive is the broken tackles. His balance, he's got a very distinct and unique style. And while he's very different from Barry Sanders, I think the compliment that I would give him is that it reminds me of Barry Sanders in the sense that it's not so much about power, it's not so much about speed necessarily all the time, and he is a fast player, but I just think I remember watching Barry Sanders as a kid. And the thing that always blew me away with him was his ability to break tackles and just keep his balance. And as guys would hit him, it didn't matter if it was a 250-pound linebacker or a huge safety hit or a defensive end. A lot of times they couldn't bring him down, and it had nothing really to do with power or weight. It was just balance. And Alvin Kamara has that hit factor, and he's a huge reason the Saints won the game.
We're talking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, defense, your thoughts. I know there was the garbage time touchdown at the end that helped fantasy football owners of Russell Wilson, and I know they did a nice job early on in the first half, but the defense did still give up 400 yards, 450 total yards to Russell Wilson. I know he's special. So how do we judge what we saw out of the defense on Sunday?
I think you have to be very happy with how they played. You know, listen, the score was 33-14 with 4 minutes and 19 seconds left in the fourth quarter. At that point, the game was over. The defense had had multiple turnovers on down. I think it was three or four where they get a change of possession there, give the offense the ball back, including once inside the 30, giving the Saints a very short field to work with where the offense goes and gets a touchdown. So multiple turnovers on down. They scored a touchdown, create a big turnover, make a huge play there. It was nice to see it count this time. You know, I think defensively you have to be really happy with how they played. Again, giving up 14 points. And look, Russell Wilson is going to get his. He's an elite quarterback. He's one of those guys that is very, very difficult to stop. And, yes, you would have liked to have seen them finish the game a little bit better. I'm less worried about yards, if I'm being honest, Raymond, because the Seahawks were able to move the ball a little bit, but on those huge fourth and ones, fourth and five, fourth and four, those are the times where I thought Russell Wilson and the Seattle offense really needed to come through, and they didn't. And the Saints had the upper hand in those situations. So there were some things to clean up. Now, the pass rush, I thought it never got home, and that was disappointing. When you look at the Saints having 9 sacks through their first 2 games and Russell Wilson being sacked 8 times through his first 2 games, you thought that would add up to more sacks. And when Russell Wilson throws the ball 50 times in a game, which was the case here, you've got to be able to get a sack. To me, that was inexcusable. But that disappointment aside, I think overall you have to be happy. Look, they gave up a lot of yards and a couple touchdowns in garbage time with prevent defense. Again, you'd like to see him finish the game a little better, but they did enough to win the game, and I thought they played well when it mattered.
Talking with Andrew Jude of the Saints Happy Hour podcast, he joins us here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. All right, Andrew, let's move it forward this Sunday. Sunday night football. It's going to be, you know, a huge game there inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. The Dallas Cowboys come to town. They're undefeated. I'll ask you, can they have the same game plan they did against Seattle and beat Dallas, or do they need to be a little bit more creative and aggressive with the play calling?
Well, I think it all depends on if they can get another special team score and a defensive score. You know, if they get 2 free touchdowns that way, then I do think they can use a similar game plan. Look, if the other team is making mistakes, then you can beat them simply by not making any. And that's kind of how that Seattle game played out. So, yes, if Dak Prescott throws a couple interceptions early, Saints get a defensive touchdown, the offense works with a short field thanks to special teams. Thomas Morstead is hitting 58 and 64-yard punts and downing them inside the 2. If all those things are happening, then I do think a similar game plan could work, but I think there's a reality here that we're probably going to need to see more from the offense. The Cowboys, they're 3rd in points in the NFL, 4th in total offense. Now, the degree of difficulty so far has been pretty minimal. The opponents that Dallas has faced in their first 3 games, they've been able to coast. Now, they have been putting up a nice point total, and they have played very well offensively. And they're kind of rolling right now. I mean, Dak Prescott is playing some of the best football of his career right now, I think. Amari Cooper, obviously, starting from last year when Dallas made that trade, has been very effective for the Cowboys. A big matchup to watch. I mean, teams have not been afraid to go after Marshawn Lattimore. And he has been off to a shaky start this season. And so I think if there's one player and one matchup to watch, it would really be great to see him step up and have an impact in this game, because I'm sure that he's going to be on Amari Cooper for most of this game. Based on the way he's played this year, I think Dak Prescott is going to have no problems going after him, and it's going to be up to him to kind of step up and respond. So that's the matchup for me to watch in this game. Obviously, the Saints are going to want to do a good job on the ground. I thought they did an excellent job against Chris Carson and the Seahawks stopping the run. They're going to have to do a similar job against Ezekiel Elliott. So that's going to be important. But this Dallas offense is very potent, and so I think it starts defensively. But I do think it's likely Teddy Bridgewater is going to have a bigger impact statistically and make better, bigger plays downfield for the Saints to have a chance in this one, because there's a chance that Dallas is going to score a lot of points, in which case the Saints are going to have to play well offensively to keep up with them.
Wrapping things up here with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline every Tuesday morning. All right, Andrew. Jared Cook, look, I know it's only three games, but when I watched that game on Sunday, I started thinking of Kobe Fleener. I'm not trying to jump to that conclusion. I'm really not, because I feel like you still need time, and maybe Teddy just doesn't have that rapport with Jared that maybe he was already developing with Drew Brees. I get that. But you went out and you spent the money to get yourself a big free agent tight end, and he's been nothing. Like, we're talking 60 yards in three games and, like, five catches. And you brought him in to have that on a per-game average. So, your thoughts so far on Jared Cook. Can they get him involved? Is that something that Sean Payton's going to have to consciously make an effort to do with Teddy now as the quarterback?
You know, Raymond, it would be one thing if he was catching three balls a week on three targets. You know, it'd be one thing if he was highly efficient and the times they were trying to go to him, he was rewarding the team. That would give me a little bit more hope. But in game two, when you talk about seven targets and two catches, and again yesterday you saw a back shoulder throw where he wasn't ready for the ball, and by the time he turns around, it hits him right in the hands and he drops it. And that's kind of been Jared Cook his whole career, Raymond. And honestly, last year was the aberration. Last year, out of nowhere, with the Raiders, he put together what was by far the best season of his career at 31 years old. And it was a big surprise to everyone around the league, because for a long time, Jared Cook's reputation was, hey, great body, guy can run, he should be an elite receiving tight end, but he struggles with consistency. He struggles with drops. He struggles with route consistency. That's been his whole career. That's been his MO. I don't know what changed for him last year and why he had such a fantastic season, but he seems to be regressing back to the norm. And this Jared Cook is the Jared Cook I've known his whole career in the NFL, unfortunately for the Saints. And so it seems like, at least right now, that season last year was an aberration, and he's regressed back to the mean. And so, I think right now he just doesn't offer enough consistency for the Saints to be able to trust him. And when you talk about having a backup quarterback in the game, and you talk about your margins for error shrinking, you just can't have the mistakes like he had against the Rams where he lets a ball pop up and causes an interception. You can't have a drop pass on first and 10 that when you could have had second and two, now you're giving your quarterback second and 10 instead. I just personally think the margins shrink when you have Teddy Bridgewater as your quarterback, because he's a backup and Brees is out. And so you just can't afford to be taking risks downfield with a guy you don't trust. And, you know, I know you say Kobe Fleener half jokingly, but it really does feel like that. You're right. It really does feel like a tight end that could be great, that has the body, that has the skill set, that has the size, has the speed, but just isn't putting it all together. And unfortunately, I think time is running out. Now, Jared Cook is going to get a little rope here. He's going to get a chance to play because the Saints don't really have anything behind him. And, you know, whether it's Josh Hill, Josh Hill is really the only other tight end on the roster. Maybe they try to get Taysom Hill more involved at that position. But ultimately, they're kind of stuck with Jared Cook at least this year as their main tight end. So they're going to keep playing him, and hopefully he can have some better games. But really, really disappointing to see what, in my eyes, is turning out to be a free agency bust.
Andrew, appreciate you, Tom, as always, brother. Keep up the great work. When does the new podcast drop, my friend?
We're recording tonight, so we'll do a free show tonight that's an hour long, and we'll recap the game and start looking forward to the Cowboys game. So you can check us out on the Internet. We're on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. Just search for Saints Happy Hour Podcast. And we also do a weekly show if you're a patron and you donate. But that show that comes tonight that drops will be an hour-long show for free.
Andrew, appreciate it, my friend. Enjoy yourself. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Thank you.
That's Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour Podcast. He joins us every Tuesday talking Hoodats. We got to take a quick time out. You're listening to RP3 and Company. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on the Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios. We've had a tremendous show so far, but it's time to come down the home stretch, and there's no one better to help us with that than our good friend, our old friend. He's been with us since the days of the Rap Game show here on 103.7 The Game. He's a BCS national champion with the LSU Tigers. He is a Super Bowl champion with the New Orleans Saints. He is part of the LSU pregame show. He's got a great podcast as well. It's the one and only Big Fave himself, Marlon Favorite. Marlon, good morning to you, brother. It's been way too long.
It's been a while, RP, man. Good morning, brother. Thanks for having me on the show again. And last year, give me a big hello, somebody.
Hello, somebody, to Marlon. All right, Big Fave. I want to get your thoughts on both LSU and the Saints, brother, because I know you can talk about both of them with your experience and your knowledge. So let's start with LSU, my man. I know the offense has been sensational, but as a cat that played defense like you did, and you played it well at a high level and won a national championship, what's going on with the Tigers' defense so far this season through four games?
Biggest thing more than anything else is the amount of injuries we have and the combination of the depth chart. That's the biggest issue with LSU right now. I don't think Dave Aranda is falling off. I really don't think that our defense isn't capable. What you see right now is our strength being our secondary, right? Derek Stingley, man, I'm just super proud of him. I spoke with his dad the other day. And, man, I had nothing but good things to say about that young man and his development and maturity as a freshman. But outside of that, you have Rashard Lawrence. He's out. You have Glenn Logan. He is out. Michael Divinity went out early in this last game against Vanderbilt. So we're dealing with a number of injuries, which is really affecting us up front. I'm forgetting the main ingredients. Caleb Von Chasson, he's out. So, I mean, these guys here, you know, make up the DNA of this LSU LSU's defense. So now we're forced to go with younger guys. We're forced to, try to put our linebackers in positions to make sacks as opposed to depending on our front four guys, with one of the guys being a buck, outside linebacker, for our listeners to kind of get an idea. So I think that's the major thing going on with LSU's defense. Once we're able to get our back healthy the next 2 weeks going into Florida.
We're talking with Marlon Favorite, LSU national champion, Saints Super Bowl champion. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. All right, Marlon, Coach O called out his team, though, called out his defense about the tackling and that it's been sloppy. That's been a bit surprising for me. That's the most surprising thing I've seen from LSU's defense this year is they look more focused on trying to force a turnover than wrapping guys up. Is that what you're seeing?
That's what I'm seeing, RP. I mean, you guessed it, and I agree with Ed Ogeron 100%. That's something that's very basic fundamentals, you know, wrap up tackle, secure the tackle. And we do live in an era where everybody's the honey badger, right? Everybody want to create tackles. I mean, create turnovers for the team, which I'm in total agreement with that. But I want to take it back to an old school coaching fundamental. What we call it continual education in football. Even in my pro days, all the way up to arena ball, we did that drill. It's the tackling drill. You secure your tackling strip. You secure the tackle first. Meaning, what they say, for instance, I'm an old lucky left-hander, baby. Lucky left. I'm going to secure, depending on if I'm coming to my right, I'm going to secure that tackle with my left hand and then try to strip the ball with the opposite hand. It's too many guys that's just going straight for the ball, and that's a gamble. It's a hit or a miss. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But when the time it don't work, it's tragic in a lot of cases. Sometimes guys hit their head on the head, on the goalpost for the opposite touchdown. Now, there is a technique you can use in a group tackling where it's a situation where you see one of your teammates secure the tackle and you have your eye on the ball. Then you go in for a strip. But outside of that, man, you want to keep those original fundamentals in order.
We're talking with Marlon Favorite. He's part of the LSU pregame show. He also has his own podcast. and he also does work for the NFL Network as a guest analyst. All right, Marlon, let's switch over to the pros. Let's switch over to the Saints. They're able to overcome the loss of Drew Brees. They get to a win on the road. They're on the road against Seattle, who has notoriously been a difficult team for the Saints. Your thoughts on what you saw from the Hoodats on the road Sunday against the Seahawks?
Man, I have to give credit where credit is due. And I want to give credit to the Saints coaching staff, not only the coaching staff, the scouts as well, the general manager, assistant general manager in Jeff Ireland, and the forward thinking, just so much forward thinking. And, man, let's keep Teddy Bridgewater here. 19-9, but let's keep Teddy Bridgewater here. That was key. And I'll tell you why. Like, who knew Drew Brees was going to get hurt in the second game of the season? Who knew that? You couldn't have guessed that. But it happened, and they were prepared. They had Teddy Bridgewater, highest paid backup in the league, ready to go. Now, the L.A. game, Teddy got in. You know, the entire week, their game plan to have Drew Brees in. And I'll be honest with you, they went to a vanilla play calling just to get through that game. But against Seattle, a few things happened. One, they called plays to put Teddy Bridgewater in some type of rhythm. I thought that was intelligent. Short pass to Alvin Kamara. Little screen game here. Little handoff here. You know, quick pass game. They went into that real quick to load the box up and do some preparations. But the thing that got them rolling more than anything else is the defense and special teams. Big play by Devontae Harris, taking it to the house punt return. And then the defense backdooring it, Bell causing the fourth strip. If you see in that play, take it back to earlier in our conversation, he stripped the ball, but he secured the tackle first. And Bell having enough awareness to be there. So you saw a balanced team go on the road. And I have to give credit to Coach Sean Payton and doing what he had to do to keep Teddy Bridgewater in that room and not go to Miami.
Talking with Marlon Favorite, LSU national champion, Saints Super Bowl champion. He's also a guest analyst for the NFL Network, and he's part of the LSU pregame show. Marlon, tell me what you're seeing from Marcus Davenport. Is he making strides, in your opinion, there in the front seven for the Saints, the second-year player out of UTSA?
He's moving very slowly but surely, right? Now, here's the issue. The question is, okay, how much time you need, right? He's getting home. He's definitely getting home. If you're watching the game, you see he's getting in the backfield sometimes, but he's having the issue of breaking down and securing the sack. Now, Russell Wilson might be the most slipperiest quarterback in the NFL. I mean, the Saints won it, but they didn't win it through sacks. They had zero sacks in that game. So it's a lot of pressure on the young kid. I had him on Inside the Trenches a few weeks back. For our listeners out there, Lafayette, if they want to go to the podcast and check that episode out to listen to him, Marcus Davenport, he said something that really caught my attention. He said before he went to training camp, he wanted to decompress. Okay? So that tells me one thing. It's a lot of pressure on him. And that's normal. You know, you're a first-round draft pick. Not only are you a first-round draft pick, they use two draft picks to get you. So the coaching staff knew he was going to be a project. They love his upside more than anything else. But for the time, it's not on his side. He wants to start producing now because you have a young Trey Hendrickson, who's, you know, I want to say he's in the third year of his contract, so he's looking to get paid. And they have a little more trust in him in the third down game. And then you also have the draft coming up this year. So, I think he has another year to get it together. If not, they may start looking another direction.
Marlon, appreciate you making time for us. As always, keep up the tremendous work with everything that you're doing, man. And we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Man, thanks for having me on. Pete, talk soon, baby.
That's Marlon Favorite, Big Fave, joining us there on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, breaking down LSU and breaking down Saints as only Big Fave can. We appreciate his time. We got to take a quick time out here. Our final one of the day. More RP3 and Company, though, coming up right here on KDN Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. A little news or report before we sign off here. Daniel Cormier, Lafayette's own, made the announcement yesterday on the television that he has one more fight in him, ladies and gentlemen. That's right. DC made the announcement that he will fight one more fight before retiring. Remember, his last fight was against Stipe Miocic. It was a rematch of their first fight. DC had won the first fight. He loses the second fight there in the fourth round. Well, he made the announcement yesterday that he is, in fact, going to be fighting one more. He announced it that he plans to retire after a trilogy fight with Stipe. So that is going to happen. He says that UFC is going to sign off on it as well. No date has been selected. No fight card has been put together. But DC made the announcement yesterday that he will fight one more fight before officially retiring from the UFC and from mixed martial arts. So we're going to get that trilogy fight after all with Stipe. DC will take him on, and it's going to be phenomenal. I can't wait. I'm glad DC is going to fight one more time. He does not want to go out like he did, losing the fight the way he did. I think he wants to go out on his own terms. One more fight. The first two fights have been amazing. There's no reason why this third fight, we won't think, won't be as amazing as well. Now, it's time for us to head back out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our fourth and final guest of today's show. He's been with CBS Sports Network since 2009. He calls college football games and serves as a studio analyst. But before working on the college football side, he served as an NFL analyst for CBS starting in 1989. He will be on the call for San Jose State at Air Force this Friday on CBS Sports Network. And he can also be seen on Inside College Football tonight. It's the one and only Randy Cross. Randy, good morning to you. Appreciate your time, brother. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you.
Randy, let me ask you, let's start off here with college football. Look, obviously, we're right next to LSU. We're attached to them. We broadcast their games. So we get all the Joe Burrow love 24/7 down here. But from your perspective, from a national perspective, how good is LSU and how good is Joe Burrow so far?
Well, I think Joe Burrow has answered a question, and he started answering it probably the last five or six games of 2018. LSU's been a team, everyone knows they've got some of the best talent in the country. And that's the kind of football that's played in Louisiana from at the high school level and then all the JC guys down in that area. But it was always, boy, LSU, look at that. If they only had a quarterback, well, he's the answer to that question. They have a quarterback. And more importantly, he's been allowed to flip that thing around. And they've had unbelievable talent at wide receiver. Just go through the names that have been there at LSU in the last, you know, 5-10 years. But they've never had the delivery system. And that's not a problem right now. He's proven that that's something that, at least while he's still there, they've got it.
We're talking with Randy Cross, CBS Sports Analyst, College Football Hall of Famer. Randy, let's talk outside of – well, let's stay in the SEC. Auburn seems to be a very sneaky, good team. They're kind of under the radar. It always seems like when people think Gus Malzahn's on a hot seat, he does tremendous. When people think Auburn should be good, they underperform. What are your thoughts on what the Auburn Tigers are doing right now?
My defense, kind of crazy good. I love their front seven. I've got a lot of respect for Jimbo Fisher and what he's doing at A&M, which in short order is going to be pretty doggone good in that meat grinder that is the West and the SEC. But Auburn went in there and pretty much controlled the game. I like the way they played. I just looked at that last night. They've got an amazing front seven, specifically defensive line. Their offensive line is starting to play really, really well. And they're slowly letting their quarterback kind of mature and progress. And as long as they can keep doing that, you know, down the line they've got Georgia, Alabama, teams like that. They're going to need that kid to be able to carry part of that offense against really good teams. And, you know, if you're Gus Malzahn, you got to really, really hope that this time is when you build the confidence and sort of the repertoire to be able to do that.
We're talking with Randy Cross, CBS Sports analyst. Randy, I want to talk a little bit about the ACC and Clemson. Trevor Lawrence has had an up-and-down season so far. I think that's to be expected, though, after it being inserted as the starter last year. Tape is now out there on him, and all young quarterbacks hit a wall. What do you make of what Clemson's been able to do so far, in particular Trevor Lawrence?
Well, I would not celebrate too early when it comes to the death of Dabo and what they're doing there at Clemson. Yeah, has he thrown? You know, he's thrown five interceptions, and people look at that and go, "Wow, that must be that's how we beat Clemson." Well, I'd be careful celebrating. They're still supremely talented. That kid can still throw the heck out of the ball. And Dabo still has a pretty good offensive line and an option of just turning around and handing the ball to Etienne and the rest of them to kill you with the run. So I think he's a sophomore, and I think he's got this year and next year before he's going to be the number one pick in the draft.
We're wrapping things up with Randy Cross, CBS Sports analyst. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Randy, I want to get your thoughts on Florida State, Willie Taggart. It's been a rough go of it there for the Seminoles, and that's a proud program. What do you make of the state of where Florida State is right now?
It's kind of sad, to be honest with you. I looked at Florida State. My oldest daughter actually went there for a couple of years before she transferred to Georgia. But, it's gotten to the point where you've always expected a depth of amazing talent at the Seminoles. And it's kind of shocking to see that, you know, that's not even close to the truth, to see what can happen to this program and how poor it's been in the last year or so. And I'm not sure if they've hit bottom yet. And a lot of that has to do with they were always amazing at the skill positions, but at the line of scrimmage, they could really maul you and control the game. And that's something you just can't say.
Randy, appreciate your time, brother. I know you're busy. Enjoy the call this weekend, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
No problem. Anytime.
That's Randy Cross, CBS Sports analyst, jumping on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, talking all things college football with us. That's going to do it for today's show. Reminder, Prep Power Hour returns this afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Full 3 hours, Ben Love, host of Bumper Bumper Sports, will be live at Pete's on Johnston. It's the third week of the Prep Power Hour, so make sure to join Ben Love as he hosts Bumper to Bumper Sports live from Pete's on Johnston tonight. The action will start at 4. It'll go all the way through 7, and of course, 6 to 7 is the actual Prep Power Hour. Come out and support the St. Thomas More Cougars. STM will be in the house representing there at Pete's on Johnston. Once again, Prep Power Hour today at Pete's on Johnston with the good brother, Ben Love, in the house. You can listen to that live right here on 103.7 The Game, or go by and check it out yourself. I want to thank all of our guests. Tremendous show. Jarrett Rozier, Andrew Juge, Marlon Favorite, and Randy Cross. Y'all be safe to one another today. Be kind to one another. Y'all have a great day. And we'll talk to you tomorrow right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.